Welcome back to the Daily Thunder Podcast, and welcome back to Thunder Playoff Basketball. I'm here, as always, with Daily Thunder beat writer Brandon Rabar, who was in the room. Brandon, before we get to the game, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. We're talking about Thunder basketball. We're coming off a win, a close win, and I'm excited to talk about it. I am good.
We were slightly delayed getting started tonight, hitting record, jumping in, because Brandon had to stop at Taco Bell. So his penance for our slight delay is he has to give us his Taco Bell order and what he enjoys when going to T-Bell. Are you are you frequenting Taco Bell? Is this a late night option only? I know you're just coming from a little bit of basketball.
Yeah, so it's a late night option only. Like, it was just because everything else was closed. That is the only reason. I was looking for some chicken. It was all closed. You know, you work out, like you play basketball, you're feeling good about yourself. You lost some pounds. You're all sweaty. The last thing to me you want is Taco Bell. But at the same time, you kind of like excuse it. It's like, well, I just lost a lot of calories.
You earned it.
Exactly. I earned this Taco Bell. Like, it's a special treat for me. Like, back when I was a teenager, that was like a nightly thing. Now, now it's like a once every couple of months Taco Bell. So you got me on a good night, Ryan. I haven't had it for a couple months. Now, I will say, though, my order was boring. Usually I like to go like Mexican pizza, Enchirito, which is kind of like off the menu, kind of secret menu thing.
That's not tonight. Boring. If you're going off menu, that nothing boring about that.
No. Tonight was boring. I'm saying usually I go off menu for the Enchirito. Tonight, though, I just got a crunchy taco and a bean burrito with sour cream. Got to add the sour cream in the bean burrito.
There you go. Yeah, I hate sour cream, so not me, but more power to you. Very good. Very good. You were in the room last night, and I want to start with the environment, the atmosphere, the crowd. We've talked all year about, you know, both on the podcast and offline about the crowd and how it's been. It just feels like it's growing and it's coming back after a couple years of a very uncompetitive basketball. And we've chatted of questioned, like, will it reach levels that we're accustomed to? And I'm going to leave it with you. Grade it 1 to 10. 10 being like the loudest. I'll say the loudest I remember was probably the somewhere in that 2012 run to the finals, whether that be in the Lakers series with that insane Russ finish and transition, the and one, something along in that Spurs series. Let's say that's 10. Where are we at?
Yeah, I think those are good 10s. I remember like when Perk dunked it to like clinch going to the finals.
That's 10. You're right. Yeah. That's 10. Yeah. That's 10.
The Russ flip shot, that's a 10. So I would say last night, and you know, I was curious because the crowds have been great this season, especially these last few months. Like, it's been building. The crowds have been getting louder and louder, better and better. And they've been good all year, but man, they've been good lately. But I was like, let's see if this crowd gets to the level that I remember, you know, because it's been years since like the glory days. Like, and there's a definite difference between like those days and the playoff crowds of, say, the Russ PG era. So this crowd, though, I'm going to give it a 9.7. I'm telling you, it was close. It was, and I'm leaving like a little room here because, you know, it's been years and years, but man, those were intense. But last night, they did not disappoint. They exceeded expectations. And I was wondering, like, you know, because I've been there every game this season, I was like, they've been loud, but I know they can go to another level. I know playoff level and Loud City is another level. And you have that remembrance of the Russ and KD days. Man, they were incredible. It was so loud. They were announcing the Pelicans I could not hear a single word that the PA announcer for the Thunder was saying because of the OKC chants. There were so many times you could not hear what the PA guy was saying. Or
and
like
was that prompted at all? Was that prompted, the OKC chant at that point?
No, that was organic, which was really, really cool. Yeah, it was like everything that you remember Loud City being in the glory days, the first era, that's what it was last night.
That's how it came across on TV. I was watching the TNT broadcast, and you know, I tweeted a couple days ago when they showed the shirts that were going to be on the seats, like, just get the shirts on. Like, you're not too cool for the shirt. You're not too wealthy for the shirt. You're not flexing on anybody, not putting the shirt on. It was phenomenal participation. I've received word, aided by some Jumbotron shaming, for a couple people, which is beautiful. What a great move. But just from tweets that I was seeing from like the stuff at Scissor Tail before the game, much earlier than tip off, like way before tip off, there started to be, it seemed like this swell of energy outside the arena, which that's the first sign. That's a great sign already, because that's what it felt like back in the day, was this lead up to the game. It wasn't even like the lights flipped on at tip off. This started much earlier in the day, and the more videos that started coming to Twitter as the game got closer, I was like, wow, it's gonna deliver. Like, this is gonna happen, and it's gonna be everything we hoped it would be. The TNT broadcast tends to be, I think you tend to get a little more crowd mic in that broadcast than like a local broadcast, but it was so intense, so loud. The first time, so Oklahoma City lost the opening tip off, and so the Pelicans start walking it into the front court. And the first defense chant from the crowd, I was like, I didn't know what else to do but laugh. I'm standing up in front of the TV, and it is so loud and intense. I can only imagine what that must have been like in the room.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, a few of us on press row just kind of looked at each other with like kind of like that dumbfounded, like, wow.
Yes. Yeah.
So like just kind of that look. We couldn't talk to each other because we couldn't hear each other. That's actually. I was joking, but now I think about it, we were like, it was hard to hear each other at certain points of the game. Like, you know, if you're leaning over to talk or whatever. The best part of it all, though, by far, and I don't know, I was curious how this came across on TV, but the barking.
Yeah, it came through loud and clear.
Oh, it was really, really cool. To hear that in person. And that was, anytime J-Dub did something great, J-Will, either one of the Jalen Williams did anything, the crowd barking, and then seeing J-Dub bark back at the crowd,
yeah,
was so good. You know, that Jonas Valanciunas tie-up, and J-Dub talked about it in the presser afterwards. Like, he was asked about it. He's like, well, he picked me up off the ground and yelled at me, so I didn't know how else to respond. I just started barking. I don't know.
that was a clear energy shift,
yeah,
in the room. My brother-in-law was at the game, and he was sending me like more just like crowd observations, because I was asking him like, what's it feel like? He was at game six 2012 against the Spurs, so I was like, tell me, what's it feel like? And he was like, the timeouts are killing us, the timeouts are really long. And that's like the TV timeouts are really long, and it's taking a minute. It's taking something to get them back. And when that, he specifically mentioned the coming out of the quarter break, coming into the second quarter, and 13 seconds in, New Orleans takes a timeout. he was like, after that, it took a minute. And then when that instance that you just brought up happened, that the Valanciunas Jalen Williams tie-up, he sends me a text, and he's, you know, probably a minute at least ahead of me, being in the arena. I get a text that says, "Energy's back," all caps, and and as I'm as he sends that, as I'm seeing Jalen, and the barking was very loud through the. I was wondering, do they have you in 104?
Yeah, they 103.
103. Yeah. Well, I was about to text you if you were sending out some barks from 103. I know cheering's not allowed in press row. I was just wondering if that included barking.
That is a great loophole. That I'll talk to I was sitting next to Barry Trammell. And Andrew Schlett. I will mention that to both of those guys and see if we can get a little dog pound going from 103.
I was thinking, you know, might want to check the fine print. You know, I doubt barking is included. What do you think of the nickname, the compound? Kind of, and this is not mine. I saw this. I wanted to run this by you. I saw it on Twitter. I apologize. I don't remember who I saw it from. But a combination of Paycom and a dog pound into just the compound.
That's really good. That really is good.
The compound. That feels like it has staying power.
That really
does. If we're gonna bark mid game, that feels like it has staying power.
That is really good. We got to find out who did that.
I will find it once we post this. I will find it and I will give credit because I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's good. The compound. I like that.
All right. A phenomenal win, a sigh of relief kind of win. What I wanted to ask you, kind of without giving you any warning on this, I want to just name players and I want you to give me your initial 1 through 10 grade on their night.
Okay.
And I kind of know where I think I have my highest grade. I want to see where if we have the same one. I'll start with Shea, 1 through 10. Obviously, this is taking into consideration what you expect out of that player.
Yeah, I would give Shea an 8, and that may seem high given the struggles in the fourth quarter. You know, that series where he missed a few shots in a row. He had, I think, 3 turnovers and 3 missed shots. But look, Herb Jones is probably the best defender in the league when it comes to Shea. Shea still gets his. Nobody can just stop Shea. Shea's going to get his. And anytime there was a switch and he got like CJ McCall on him, he like immediately attacked and scored. But they're building a wall and they got Herb Jones. They're throwing Trey Murphy. They're throwing like, but here's the thing. He hit the 2 biggest buckets of the game. He won the game. So despite, you know, you look at, you know, 11 to 24, you look at, you know, atypical fourth quarter struggles for Shea, he still hit the 2 biggest buckets of the entire game. So I think he still deserves an 8 grade.
I think that's more than fair. Jalen Woods.
J-Dub, I would also give an 8. He was incredibly important for the first 3 quarters of that game as far as his scoring goes. I know he had a couple of steals, but, you know, nobody could really make a bucket. I mean, on both sides, you know, both defenses played really well. A lot of missed open looks that were good looks. But through the first 3 quarters, I mean, J-Dub's scoring was so important to the team. And, you know, we didn't see the typical fourth quarter J-Dub, but we got quarters 1 through 3 J-Dub. And without that, the Thunder don't win that game.
Chet Holmgren.
Chet, I would probably give a 9. His 5 blocks, and, you know, in a game like that, you win 94-92. Every point that you take off the board is so huge. He had double-digit rebounds, double-digit points, a couple of huge threes. I mean, that late three was really big. And then that game-saving block on Larry Nance Jr., like critical clutch block. Yeah, I'm going to give Chet a 9. This is playoff debut. I'm going to give him a 9.
Lou Dort.
Man, I feel like I'm giving out all these really high grades for a game that was 94-92 that the Thunder barely won. But Lou's defense on Brandon Ingram may have been the most important key to this win. Like, when you look at the overall scope of one player, Brandon Ingram was 5 of 17 from the floor. He scored 12 points. And yeah, Kenrich Williams got switched to him a couple of times. But for the most part, that was Lou Dort's assignment. And he was everywhere. He hit a big three. He only hit two shots. He had 6 points. They were both threes. He didn't take very many shots, but he was everywhere on defense. And then things like, he got that jump. There was like a jump ball or loose ball. He got down on the floor, picked it up. Shea scored in transition. That was a big bucket. He did a bunch of the little things that he's known for. I will give him a 9 for his role that he played. I'm going to give him a 9.
He's my highest grade of the game, Lou Dort.
Yeah. What'd you give him?
I'd give him at least a 9, maybe 9, yeah. 9.5. There would be no one above him. I'll say that.
I would agree. That's a good call. 9.5.
I was mesmerized by that level of defense. And just his, like, just of the guys who I would say looked ready for that game. When I say game, like the moment, from the tip to the end of the game, it felt like Lou Dort was built for it. And he hit an early three, playing just phenomenal defense. I found his, even though the ball wasn't going to him much early in the game, his level of intensity and attention to detail and physicality was so appropriate. It matched the moment. And when, you know, it's first experience, you know, for a lot of the guys on the floor in a game like that. Everybody, you know, other than Shea and Lou in that starting unit are out there seeing all this for the first time. It felt like it too in certain spots in that first half, a little sloppy at times. And we can get to some of that, but it felt like Lou was such a steadying physical wing player last night. And I think it had a real impact on the game and his teammates. I thought he was exactly what they needed last night. I wasn't surprised by it, but that made it even cooler. Like, yeah, let's just confirm here. Lou Dort is built for these big moments. There is not a single game that he's going to back down from.
Yeah, the lights were never too bright for Lou Dort. He steps up. We saw this his rookie year, undrafted rookie, in that series against the Rockets. And, you know, he earned his reputation as the Harden stopper in that series. But then he also, like that game 7, you know, biggest 30. Moment. Yeah, hit 30. And I think hit 7 threes. Yeah. I'm still curious to see if that last one, that last one that Harden somehow blocked. It was going, man.
That was a really encouraging, phenomenal game from Lou. And again, it wasn't like it wasn't some big offensive night from him, and it didn't need to be. He was such a force on defense, and Ingram is such a. That is the kind of player that, like, those bigger wings that Lou is. He's stronger than. And it can also, like, get leverage on. It's such a good matchup for him. Whereas McCollum is a player that's the kind of player that if Lou struggles, it's with a Jamal Murray. And I mean, we've seen him have success there, but like a Jamal Murray, a CJ McCollum, a Trey Young, like smaller, quicker guards that are moving a lot off screens. And enter Cason Wallace. He was so good, so impactful defensively last night.
Yeah, I mean, his defense on CJ McCollum on the game-winning attempt for a guy that he's a rookie. He's 20 years old, came into the season at 19. I mean, this is exactly why the Thunder took him, because he can hit threes. He's a smart player, and his one-on-one perimeter point of attack defense, you saw it. He almost stole the ball from CJ McCollum. He almost straight swiped him, but he stayed on it. McCollum did get a look. I mean, he did get a look, but it was lunging forward, you know, kind of off balance. So that's a tough shot. I mean, CJ McCollum can hit it, but Cason Wallace made it very, very difficult, and he didn't foul him either. Like, he played him tight and physical without fouling. Great defense from Cason Wallace in that moment. And Cason, he hit a big three to that AMO three that he hit where he didn't dip at all.
Yeah.
He only took three shots. He was 2 for 3, 1 of 2 from 3-point range, 5 points. But again, in a 94-92 game, every single point is big. That three was big. That defense was big. And he played more minutes than anybody off the bench. He played more minutes than Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, Gordon Hayward, Jay Will, or Kenrich. So he was only 1 minute away from playing as many minutes as Josh Giddey. And I mean, you could argue that against this team, having another guy like Cason Wallace, who you can trust from three, you can trust his defense, throw another defender at those guys, like let Lou Dort handle Ingram, put Wallace on CJ McCollum. You can put J-Dub on Trey Murphy or Shea on Trey Murphy. Like, he gives you so much flexibility. He gives you so many options being a two-way player as a rookie.
I think it's a series we're going to see a lot more of him.
I think so, too. I'm curious to see, you know, Gordon Hayward only played 9 minutes. Like, if I was to grade him, I'd give him an incomplete because my man didn't take any shots, and I wish he would take some shots. Like, I know that Gordon Hayward can shoot, and we've seen him shoot. He's just not taking any shots. I wish he would. When he's out there, he can really help the offense. He's rebounding. He's playing some defense. He's being a connecting piece. He had a steal. He had a block. That said, Cason Wallace is, when he's in there, you'll see that he's in there. He's going to make an impact with his defense. He's not afraid. You know, he gets the ball, he's going to shoot it. And we've seen he's a over 40% guy from three this year. So, yeah, I see Cason Wallace playing big minutes in this series, too.
And he had a nice little side, like, baseline screen and roll with Kenrich, where he found him on a great pass. In a spot where it felt like they were kind of reeling offensively, a lot of the night had stretches like that. So, yeah, for it to be his first game, I just wanted to shout out, like, those last three offensive possessions for New Orleans in succession was Chet, a rookie, blocking Larry Nance at the summit. And then that led to the Shea and one, which we'll get to. Coming back down, McCollum versus Wallace again. And McCollum hit a tough contested baseline jumper to cut it to one. And then finally, the last possession, again, rookie Cason Wallace on McCollum. Like, two rookies impacting and taking the assignment on the last three possessions of the game, I thought was kind of a testament to the team. Like, they're young, and if they're going to do big things in these games, it's going to be because the young guys that led them to 57 wins are going to make some plays. And they did last night in their first bit of playoff action. I thought it was really encouraging. And I think there's a lot of ways you can look at this game as far as projecting going forward. But one thing I feel fairly strong about is that it's only going to get more comfortable and more familiar to these guys the longer these series go, and the more games we play. So I think that's an incredibly encouraging sign if you're a Thunder fan, that these young guys took the challenge and found success in their first game in playoff action. I thought it was great, specifically from Cason and Chet there late in that game.
Yeah, the Thunder closed with two rookies, a sophomore, and then Shea and Lou Dort. I mean, we're the old grizzled vets at 24 and 25 years old. I mean, that's really, really crazy if you think about it. This is, you know, intense playoff basketball, and Thunder with all that youth, all those guys. I mean, that's a 20, 21, 20, newly 23, and then 24 and 25 year old. I mean, that's, I tweeted this out, you know, because everybody has been talking about how the youngest number one seed of all time, and that's incredible, obviously. But what's crazy to me is, if this exact same team, you didn't change anything from it, were to win to be the number one seed next year, they would be the second youngest team of all time to be the number one seed to this OKC team of this year. Like, that's how young they are. Like, they were
that's crazy.
Not just, I mean, that's, they are so young. And like, this is the worst Chet Holmgren and Kaysen Wallace are ever going to be.
Yeah. 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 It was really impressive. And just before we leave, Chet, like, I just thought it was so sick, so fitting that the first bucket of playoff basketball for this era was Shea getting into the paint, kind of veers out, and then turns around, and there's Chet Holmgren, the blue chip of this rebuild. Gets the outlet pass and knocks down a three. The crowd goes bananas. Like, I just found that to be so fitting. Really, really, really cool.
Yeah, no, that was great. I mean, it really was kind of a very fitting, like, this new era Thunder basketball team that, you know, was supposedly the black eye of the league, which is, you know, obviously dumb and hilarious. The one guy that, you know, the tank worked for, like, you know, was Chet Holmgren. That was their only top five pick. That's the only top five pick on this team is Chet Holmgren.
If you had to just take a stab, the next time Oklahoma City will pick in the top five with their own pick, what year would you guess?
You said with their own pick. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, well, maybe one of those Clippers picks.
I know you're too smart for that. I wasn't letting you get that one.
With their own pick? I mean,
if I said over under 2036.
I think that this team, this iteration, I mean, look, by all, look, you never know what's going to happen in the NBA. You never know what's going to happen in sports. But by all accounts, this team really, really likes each other. They're very young. J-Dub and Chet are on their rookie contracts, obviously just in their second year. So between that and restricted free agency, where the Thunder are going to give them, you know, the rookie max, the extension, you know, you can match anything, blah, blah, blah. Shea looks like he really, really likes it in OKC, and he's on a contender. Long-winded way of saying, I think this team is going to be around for a while. I would say over. Like the first iteration lasted, you know, they were a contender for a dozen years.
Yeah.
No, you said 2036, you kind of put it perfectly. But this time they have so many supplemental picks from other teams.
Right.
Like those Denver picks. And then, like, the swap with Dallas and the 76ers pick. And, you know, you could go on and on. They have all these picks in the future that should keep them competitive and young for a long time, or give them flexibility to do other things. So I say
it really could be a long time.
I think it'll be a long time.
So I kind of got sidetracked with that little hypothetical. But yeah, like, it's just insane that, like, he was the guy. They, you know, he's the kind of guy you tank for. Yeah. And they get one, and then just the home run grand salami with that 12th pick courtesy of the Clippers to take Jalen Williams and him become what he's become. Who, I'll give a shout out to Nate Duncan, no free ads, but he tweeted something to the effect of there are people who think Brandon Ingram is better than Jalen Williams. And we love to see that, especially from Nate. We love to see that.
Yeah, no, that was a great tweet. I saw that too. And it's funny because in our Daily Thunder chat, we were like, hey, let's rank the best players in the series.
I remember this.
Obviously, Shea's number one, Zion's out. So who's number two? Is it J-Dub or Ingram or Chet? And nobody picked Ingram. I'll say that. like obviously Brandon Ingram is really, really good. But J-Dub's just in his second year, but you look at efficiency, you look at, two-way playing. I get that Brandon Ingram's a former All-Star. He's still only 26 years old. He's very, very good. And for all we know, he can go off this next game. But man, J-Dub, it's that efficiency. And it's the fact that he can do it from anywhere. And it's the fact that, he just doesn't have any weaknesses. Like name a J-Dub weakness.
Right. The defensive end too is just such a bonus. It's so critical for Jalen. I felt like Brandon Ingram, he's the kind of guy that like could potentially give them problems. He's a very big, long, lanky wing who's very skilled. Watching, again, back to Dort, watching him just take the challenge was phenomenal. And then Jalen, over and over in those first three quarters, it's his sense of we need a basket and I can go get it. And I can get it in a spot that's very efficient. I know where to go. I know how to get there. I know what it's going to look like when I get there. I was very impressed. And again, another guy that I think it's only going to get easier for as we go along. I had a lot of people in my mentions talking about Trey Murphy and hearkening back to a Trey that we selected in front of him I shouldn't say in front of him, but right after him. And that Trey was not in uniform, but was there in the crowd. Shout out to Trey, man. The only thing I know to say to those people is watch Chet Holmgren. If you like what you saw from Chet, there's really nothing else to be said about Trey Murphy, because I firmly believe that had the Thunder taken Trey Murphy in the 2021 draft, the Thunder do not pick two in the 2022 draft. I just wanted to throw that out there for the people that are watching Trey Murphy shine, and he is phenomenal. But that you would probably have to pick one or the other.
Yeah, no, Trey Murphy is obviously great, and he would be great on this Thunder team. That size, that shooting ability. But I think, the butterfly effect, basically.
Yeah.
If Trey Murphy is on this team, or if Şengün is on this team, or whatever, even, three or four more wins, it affects those lottery odds, and all of a sudden maybe you don't end up with Chet. Maybe you have the, sixth or seventh pick instead. Yep. And that is a complete game changer for this franchise, picking at six or seven instead of two for Chet. So I don't think Sam Presti would change any of that. And look, Trey Mann can obviously play. I don't think that was a bad pick. He's just, when you pick a guy at that point in the draft, he's shown skills. The Thunder just have a lot of guards on this team. They have a lot of talent at that position on this team. But obviously a lot of love still between Trey and the team.
I love that he was there. That was so cool that he was there.
Yeah, it was. Because he's a Charlotte Hornet. I mean, like, it's not like his contract is up and he's a free agent because the season's over or anything like that. He is a Charlotte Hornet, and he was there in the Paycom cheering on, the Thunder.
I saw some people asking why he didn't have the shirt on. And I was he plays for another team.
Yeah, that's a step too far.
He is on a roster.
Yeah,
what a well-earned atmosphere that it's crazy. The quotes and the clips of his that have been going around from a couple years ago at exit interviews, just speaking at length on what, you know, what playoff basketball, what it would be like back in Oklahoma City, what it would mean for the city, what it means to a small market. And in just 2 years, almost to the day of those quotes, to see an atmosphere like last night all over the city, in obviously in the arena, I hope he took a moment and just cracked a smile over what he saw in the building last night. That was really, really amazing.
Yeah, no, it really was. And, you know, he's the architect of all this. Like, this rebuild, he's done it twice now. He's rebuilt a team from the ground up and made them a contender. I mean, in the matter of 15 years, that's pretty incredible. So yeah, I'm with you. Hopefully, Sam really enjoyed that, because, you know, I think that Thunder fans, for good reason, like, Thunder fans earned this. Like, the Thunder fans that stuck with the team through the rebuild, was there supporting the team, whether you were, you know, going to games, watching on TV, going online, you know, going on Twitter, social media, all those things, supporting the team, buying the shirts and the merch and the jerseys.
Whether you were team tank or team compete.
Yes, either way counts. Like, you earned this.
Yeah.
So if Thunder fans earned this, I mean, like Sam Presti really earned it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. we are both just eyeing this Lakers Nuggets game as we speak. Them,
like I see, like, as soon as one of us is done talking, the other one like looks. This is like an intense, close game.
It really is. Just to time stamp us here, I'm looking at a minute and a half left, and it's Lakers by one. 3 seconds on the shot clock. LeBron with a steal and a transition dunk. My God. Wow. Well,
wait 8 more seconds. I'm a little bit ahead of you.
Wow. Wow. Michael Porter Jr. ties the game with minute 15 left. That was an insane sequence. Wow. All right. I will say, a lot of that game last night offensively was pretty ugly. Both teams looking a bit, I don't know. I felt like Oklahoma City just looked like the environment. They were just so energized and didn't, like, I don't really know what to do with my hands kind of moment. Is that what you felt in the arena?
Yeah, look, I think it was a combination of a few things. Like, there's no way that they, you like, look, this team is incredibly mature. They have not let, you know, whatever environment they're in all season, road environment, like winning games in Denver last second, the comebacks they've had, all those things, I think, speak to this team's like composure and resiliency and all those things. That said, they're still human, and that atmosphere was the first time for every single one of them. I mean, if the media and the fans and the support staff and the Paycom, you know, staff and all that were kind of in awe of the crowd and what the crowd was doing, there's no way that the players down on the court themselves weren't kind of, you know, I don't know, too hyped up, kind of in awe, kind of like, you know, jitters, whatever you want to call it. Plus, the team, in addition to that, was off for a week. I mean, like, you know, so there's some getting the rhythm back. The Pelicans have been playing, and it's a really physical team. I think it's some sort of combination of all those things. And credit to the Pelicans. They're a really, really good defense, and they, you know, have a guy to throw at Shea. I think it's just a combination of all those things. I do expect also a combination of, I should add, they missed some really good looks. Like, they were generating a lot of really good shots that normally go down from really good shooters.
First half especially.
First half especially. And to their credit, so did the Pelicans. They missed a bunch of corner threes that were open from solid shooters as well. I expect both offenses to be better in game two.
I just can't. I can't imagine what the. I know what that room sounds like from different sections of the room. I can't imagine what that, what all of that sounds like on the court. I don't know how they hear each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because it's all funneling towards that spot. So
yeah. What did you think of the well, first, before we get to that, what did you think of the 11-man rotation?
Yeah. The thing I was most happy to see was that Shea got his minutes bumped. Like that, as far as like rotations and minutes and things like that, that was my biggest concern. I'd like Chet to get more minutes. I'd like J-Dub to get more minutes. Like all those guys at minimum should be playing like 38 minutes, if you ask me. This is the playoffs, and especially in close games. They're young guys. I remember back in the day, like for better or worse, I'm not saying it's better or worse, but like Katie and Russ would like, they were playing 40s, you know, in the minutes when it was playoff time. Now the difference is this team, I think, is deeper than a lot of those teams. And there's a lot of guys on the bench that the Thunder can trust and that they do trust. So I think that's a big difference. You know, I understand why Gordon Hayward's playing. I will say that. I understand why each of the guys that are playing, but I do think I like the idea of playing a lot of guys that you trust, but at the end of the day in close games, I do think you need to play your best players the most minutes. And that can change night to night. Like it's always going to be Shea, Dub, and Chet. But, you know, your fourth, fifth, sixth best players, that could change night to night or matchup to matchup, game to game. I'm trying to talk a long time for you so you can watch the end of this game. I got you.
I was kind of surprised by the Hayward minutes, specifically in the second half.
Yeah, like he just is not leaving his imprint on the game. And this is the playoffs, and Gordon Hayward, obviously vet, former all-star. He's not Utah Jazz Gordon Hayward, but we saw even before this injury with the Charlotte Hornets this year, like he and PJ Washington had nearly identical stats this year before their trades at the trade deadline. And I think that Gordon Hayward can still shoot. He can still score. I think he can still make a difference. I just don't think he's being aggressive enough. I don't think he's taking enough shots. I don't think he's leaving his imprint on the game like he can.
Wow. Like Jamal Murray might.
Wow.
What a shot. Holy smokes.
Right after Anthony Davis talked about not winning player of the year.
Wow. That was an unbelievable fourth quarter. Yeah, I was a bit surprised. I mean, they played 10 players in the first quarter last night. They were moving them pretty quickly, and I liked the Wiggins minutes all night. I would love to see more of Aaron. Would love to see more Isaiah Joe, specifically with Chet and Shea. I just want to see those three play a little more together, be on the floor at the same time. But like we saw, it was a night where they loved Kaysen's defense, specifically on CJ. I thought it was very telling that, you know, how much Degnault loves Lu Dort. I was not shocked to see Kaysen Wallace get those extra minutes as a bench player.
Yeah. I'm all for more Aaron Wiggins minutes. Like if you're asking me like, hey, I've got some extra minutes to divvy up, which one of these guys you're going to give them to? Aaron Wiggins is always a good answer for me. Especially,
yeah.
My main thing would be, you know, more minutes to Shea, Dub, and Chet. And Shea, I think, played a good amount of minutes last night. But, you know, keep that up and give more to Dub and Chet. And then I think Wiggins and I think Isaiah Joe is still going to make an impact in this series and in these playoffs. So I'm all for more Isaiah Joe minutes. You know, his, especially against this team, specifically the Pelicans and their defense, and then wanting to kind of build a wall and seal off the paint, Isaiah Joe's spacing and shooting can make a big difference. So off the bench, I really like Wiggins and Wallace and Isaiah Joe.
I don't do you know the exact number of threes they took last night off the top of your head?
The Thunder or the Pelicans?
The Thunder.
I do not. Man, I feel studied this box score so many times and now I can't remember because I had it memorized. Yeah. Yeah, they were 10 of 32.
I'd like to see more threes. Especially if they're going to, like, I think the matchups lends itself to more drive and kick. And if they can get Isaiah on the floor, or Kaysen on the floor, or Aaron on the floor with Shea and Jaylen, I mean, we saw him leaving Jay Will wide open, and I was pumped to see a couple go down for him. I thought he was solid last night. I just want to see, you know, Chet taking more, like the three that opened the game for Chet, I feel like is there a lot, especially if Valanciunas is on the floor. I feel like that three is open. I think he could take a lot more. I'd love to see more threes from Chet, more threes from the team in general.
Well, I agree with you completely. And Shea is due, by the way. Like,
he had a couple hit both sides of the rim. He shot it much better than his percentages last night.
Much, much better. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, he had a couple rim out, but he has now missed. I had the stat earlier. I think he's missed like his last 16 or something crazy. 0-3 last night, 0-4 versus the Mavs, and 0-7 versus the Bucks. Like, he was like a good, he was over 37%, you know, and then he missed his last at least 11 of the season, so went down to 35.3. But I still think Shea is more like a 37% three-point shooter. I think he's due is what I'm saying. Like, he's missed at least 14 in a row. The game before that against the Spurs, he was 1-3. Like, I don't know at what point he made or missed those. Shea's going to have some go down soon.
Last night, I thought he shot it really well. I do wonder if some of those 0-for nights has to do with the leg. Maybe him getting that back to full strength.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, the quad injury absolutely affected Shea. Like, he was not himself. He tried to fight through it. He was out a couple of games. It's a game winner against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. You know, then misses some games. I think that was for sure affecting him. All I know is this Thunder team was the number one 3-point shooting team in the NBA this season. They got some really good looks last night that they missed, and they had some really good shooters like Isaiah Joe and J-Dub and Chet, you know, that can go off. So I'm all about, you know, more volume as far as the three-point shooting goes, especially if the Pelicans are going to dare him to shoot, if they're going to build that wall, if they're going to seal off the paint. Like, J-Dub went 1-for-5. He's, you know, way over 40% this season. Shea was 0-for-3. Chet was 2-for-6. That's fine. Dort was 2-for-4. Giddey was 0-for-2. Jay Will was 2-for-4. He hit a huge one in the fourth quarter. That was the Thunder's final bucket until Shea hit those two big buckets there at the end.
Yeah.
Kenrich was 0-for-2. Isaiah was 1-for-3. Wiggins, of course, was 1-for-1. of course. And then Kaysen was 1-for-2. So the bench actually shot it pretty well collectively from three, but yeah, I'd like to see more threes, and I think the percentage is going to go up. Like, they'll go back to the mean. They'll progress to the mean.
Yeah. What do you think of? Go ahead.
The last thing I'll say on that: the Pelicans do, like, over this year, I think they're number two in the NBA as far as opponents' 3-point percentage. So, I mean, you know, they do hold opponents with all those long wings to low percentages. Now, I do think the Thunder are different because they're defending them, you know, they're building that wall, and the Thunder are getting good looks. So I do think that, you know, the Thunder can hit those 3-pointers against them.
What'd you think of the challenge from Daigneault at the end?
I get why he did it. I get why he did it. Daigneault has been really good on the challenges. I'll say that. And obviously he saw something on the Jumbotron or one of assistants did that, that made them think that it was their ball. And if you think it's your ball, 2 minutes to go, a tight game, I get why you did it. Obviously you hope that you're sure and you're positive. That was the worst case scenario. And add insult to injury, the refs apparently got it wrong. They should have retained their timeout because, you know, they changed the call. It went from a jump ball to Pelicans ball.
Did they confirm that today?
They haven't, and I'm really curious about that. I thought that
I did hear his comments. I heard Degnell's comments afterwards, in the presser about it, and he was pretty stern. Like, either I was wrong in Utah and never got a call about it, or they just got it wrong in a playoff game. I thought that was some pretty strong stuff from him.
Yeah, Degnell always like chooses his words carefully and says things in a very, you know, very classy,
yeah,
and non-offensive way, but that very much gets his point across and what he's trying to say, and says, hey,
like a stern talking to from your dad,
right? Yeah,
like we gotta go figure this out for him.
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
yes, exactly. Yeah, that's what they announced. That is what Tony Brothers said in the mic. They retain their ability to challenge and they keep their timeout because the challenge was deemed successful. And yeah. Then somewhere in the next 15, 20 seconds, there was a bit of a delay. They're trying to sort out, do they keep their timeout or not? And then he was told, no, you don't. And he brought up a specific instance from Utah earlier in the season where the exact same thing happened. He challenged something, he won it, but possession was awarded out of a jump ball situation to the other team, and he kept his timeout. Identical situation. And so I was waiting to see about that today, if they would clarify that, but I don't know if we've gotten that or not.
I'm surprised it hasn't been clarified. I think that it seems like the refs kind of boned that call. Like the Thunder should have kept their timeout and their challenge, it appears. And no harm, no foul, because the Thunder won that game. But that could have been critical. Like, if the Thunder lose that game and they could have used the timeout or a challenge that could have swayed the game, that could have been huge in those final couple minutes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If, you know, if the game could have easily gone a different way where we're playing the foul game, and we need timeouts, that could have been a big time inconvenience for the Thunder. All right, game two is Wednesday. We get Thunder fans get a couple days to exhale and catch their breath from a raucous game one at the compound. But we will be back to chat about game two on Thursday. We'll get that out sometime Thursday evening, maybe when you're done watching the NFL draft. You'll have a little game two reaction from Brandon and I in the feed. So, Brandon, as always, thank you very much, and a hearty congratulations and welcome back to Thunder playoff basketball to you, good sir.
Yeah, it's fun to have it back, man, and it's fun to be in that arena watching it all go down. This is a fun team to cover. It's a fun team to support, and these fans make it even that much more fun with how intense that crowd is, man. I'm looking forward to Wednesday night.
Go enjoy game two. Go get you a couple barks in from the media row, and see if you can get Barry in on that. God, what a thrill that would be!
If Barry does it, I have to do it. Like, there's no way that if Barry Trammell does it, I got to do it. So, and if you does, I'll take a video and I'll tweet it if I can get Barry Trammell to bark.
That would be a thrill. I hope that happens. I really, come on, Barry. All right. I mean, he's above reproach, right? If anybody is, if anybody can get away with it. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy game two, and we will talk to you afterwards. This is the Daily Thunder Podcast.